Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You know her. She's Perry Goldstein. You can find her on Twitter at Perry underscore Goldstein. We once again get to make fun of Alex Stroh for not being here today. I'm sure he'll be here soon enough. Hopefully 2 weeks from now, we'll finally get to talk to Mr. Celebrity himself. Alex, hope you're doing well. But Perry, more importantly, since you actually are showing up, how the heck are you doing?
I'm great. It's great to be back. Happy to be talking to you. I guess I should say we miss Alex, but
it's mandatory.
Yeah. You know, you were just saying before we started recording that OTAs are this week, which is crazy. We're like really getting into this off-season program. Countdown is official to real Packers football. We have the schedule. So we're going to be filling our time really until we get real padded practices going.
I didn't have a chance to talk to you since the schedule was released. Any just like top of mind things that stood out to you? Anything you're excited about, disappointed about? And just like, what was your elevator speech on the schedule?
They have a great schedule. Yeah. The schedulers did them a nice solid, no crazy road games, stretches. I actually love the primetime schedule because it gives them a mini bye in there. So, and I love watching the Packers in primetime because as someone who's out of town, the less I have to find a stream, the better. But I think it's a great schedule. I'm really excited about the AFC teams that are coming up. I think some like really fun young quarterbacks, kind of like the future of the NFL quarterbacks are coming to Lambeau. Yep. So, really great games. And I think also, I mean, look, we're speculating about who is going to be good. Obviously, there could be some teams that show up, that surprise, that obviously disappoint. But I think it's also going to be a schedule that should help prepare them for a playoff push. They have some tough opponents on there, which you love to see if you're actually hoping for them to make some kind of run. So all in all, I'm very pleased.
Yeah, it feels like just on paper, like you said, we don't know what these teams are going to look like. It feels like outside of Philadelphia, which I think is going to be a tough game to start. It's not like an easy schedule to start, but I do feel like it's a schedule that you can ramp up a little bit with to begin with. And then you have this sort of stretch of like 6-7 games in the middle that I think are going to be really tough and sort of test the mettle of the team to see where you at. And that's kind of where you want those games to be. Hopefully you're not too banged up yet. And also hopefully you get your stride by that point. And that's sort of like the sweet spot in the middle of the season. And then it does feel like the end of the season potentially has like, okay, if we need to win 3 of our last 4 to make a run to get in the, whatever it might be, it kind of has those games where you might be able to get right at the end of the year and hopefully hit your stride as you go in to, again, hopefully the postseason. But yeah, there's so much that I like about the schedule overall. And I think it's just going to play out well for Green Bay, assuming they take care of everything on their end, which I think we're both very hopeful that they're going to. All right. So today, since OTAs are kicking off, we figured we would go over some players that are sort of at a tipping point in their career where it's sort of a now or never sort of situation. And these players either need to step up now or it might just not happen. And that can be in a variety of different ways. It can be that they're fringe roster players. It could be that they're contract year players. There could be, or just haven't lived up to expectations so far. There's so many different ways that we can go with this, but that's what we're sort of looking at today. I think there's a lot of different players on this team that we can sort of go over and look at in this light. So Perry Goldstein, I'm going to give you the floor.
I get to go first.
You get to go first. Whoever you want to talk about now or never.
Well, we talked about a few, so I'm going to, before we start recording. So I'm going to save a few that I think I know you want to talk about. All right. But I feel like there's probably a handful that come to mind. But for some reason, one that I'll start with an obvious one, maybe. Okay. We'll start off easy and we'll go with Josh Myers. And I think this is probably one that everyone's thinking of naturally because he has been a question mark for a little while, given that his play has been somewhat inconsistent. Obviously, the Packers did a decent amount of work at the offensive line in the draft, as well as bringing in Andre Dillard and free agency, just giving them like up. He's not a center, but giving them options to move around. And then, of course, there's been a lot of discourse around moving Elgton Jenkins. Josh is in contract year, so everyone is going to have their eyes on him in terms of whether they're going to bring him back. And I think it's obviously worth the look. He hasn't been, you know, it's not a lock. His spot is not a lock. I don't think his spot is a lock in terms of, you know, is he best starting five walking into the season? Yeah, I fully expect him to be out there with the ones, given he has been a starter his entire career. And for consistency purposes, you give him that nod. He's also, I personally wouldn't move Zach Tom, right, from right tackle. I think when you have your best right tackle, you don't move him to the interior. But so Josh Myers is your best center at the moment, but someone might emerge in training camp. He's going to have serious competition. So this is going to be the offseason where he's going to have to kick it into high gear and prove that he is the starter to stay, because they brought in, I think, multiple guys who might be gunning for his job.
No, I think so too. Jacob Monk potentially being one of those players who, you know, day three draft pick, but I know a lot of very smart people that coach offensive lines and scout the NFL think that that was a very good pick for Green Bay, that he's going to be able to potentially slot into that center spot and maybe even compete sooner rather than later. Obviously, we're not, you know, going to push Jacob Monk too far, too fast. We'll see what he's capable of early on, but you have that. You've got other players that we know can play the position in Elgton Jenkins and Zach Tom.
Yeah, I think I said Elgton Jenkins first, but I meant Zach Tom. But also, we know Elgton Jenkins can play center. So
yeah, absolutely. Both of them can. Both of them can. And we have a team that is hell-bent upon trying to put the best five on the offensive line. And if you show that you're not, you have every opportunity to potentially not be that guy. I think the big thing here, as you mentioned, free agent in 2025. So if he wants to earn that second contract in Green Bay, he has to prove it now. They just did draft somebody on day three that could potentially take that spot next year. And as much as Green Bay has given him every opportunity to be the starting center, has gone out of their way to say he's playing the best football of his career, have been very complimentary of him, it's still hard to say that he's lived up to that second round expectation. It's hard to say that he's been one of the better centers or even the top 15, 20 centers in the NFL. I still think he has work to do. And I still think, I do wholeheartedly believe, even though I've sort of been tough on Myers, I do believe there's still a lot of football there for Josh Myers to play ahead of him if he can just sort of gain some level of consistency moving forward. And I'm hoping for it. I'm really hoping that this is the year that we do see the best of Josh Myers. But we saw last year, they were not hesitant to start putting competition on that line. Even if you were one of the starting five, you know, Yosh Nijman and Rashid Walker were in at left tackle. Sean Ryan and John Runyon Jr. were at right guard. So even if it is Josh Myers, and even though you don't necessarily want to be rotating centers too much, I wouldn't necessarily put it past them if they felt like, hey, Jacob Monk is making progress. He's probably our starter in 2025. We're going to start rotating him in just like they did with Sean Ryan last year and got John Runyon Jr., who is going to be a free agent this year, likely moving out, starting to get him off the field more. So that could be a situation with Myers as well.
Yeah. You don't want to be continue to have situations where they're fumbling snaps and things are happening at the, I think it was okay to chalk things up to growing pains, first year starter. And even if you were okay with doing that last season, which I think even still, you're probably not okay with doing that. But this year, like that, none of that is going to fly. And I think if you continue to see those kinds of mistakes, you're going to very quickly start to see changes there, especially from a guy who's, you know, in his fourth year. I also think there are very high expectations for the offensive line, especially in Green Bay. But I think also, like, from a fan perspective, we've had very high level center play for a long time, right? So the drop off going to Josh Myers, and this is, you know, like, no fault of his, but he had big shoes to fill, right? So it's been like quite noticeable. But that isn't a incredibly important position. I think that often gets overlooked, even especially when we're talking about the offensive line. But it is definitely not going to be overlooked this offseason and this season.
No, it makes you respect the Corey Linsleys of the world that much more for what they were able to do in their time in Green Bay and just being so freaking fantastic at playing that center position. I have to go with a very obvious one that plays in very perfectly with the topic that I talked about yesterday, which was Green Bay playing more press man. And I went back and watched some of these guys play press man, but it still has to be Eric Stokes. Eric Stokes's career has been interesting, to put it at best, where you have this rookie season, gets thrown into the fray right away, basically has to be their pseudo number one with Jaire Alexander going down, covering some of the best wide receivers in the NFL. Looks pretty decent doing it, pretty good at times doing it. I think everyone felt very confident. And then we got super excited of like, oh my goodness, Jaire's going to come back. Jaire's going to be the one. Now Stokes doesn't even have to be the one going against the tough guys. He's going to come in and be the two. And Green Bay just has its starting two corners for like the next, however, who knows how long, could be for a while. And then of course, Jaire's got his own injury issues. Stokes comes back his second season, looks nothing like rookie year. Eric Stokes takes a significant step back, then gets the injury, comes back year three, re-injures himself right before the start of the season, then finally gets back, injures himself on a special teams play, finally gets back, plays two up and down games, mostly not as great, mostly I think due to rust, and then re-injures himself again. And now we're sitting here year four, no fifth year option picked up, having no idea what to expect out of Eric Stokes and wondering, can he just at least play like he did as a rookie, where you feel pretty good about one of those corners and Eric Stokes and what he can do. I went back and I watched the tape from this past season and very small amounts of time that Eric Stokes was actually on the field. Off zone coverage didn't look very good, but that's not what he's necessarily known for. I actually came away pretty impressed on the snaps that he played press man and kind of got to do what he wanted. In my opinion, he kind of looked like Eric Stokes, like rookie Eric Stokes at times. Now it was a super small sample size, yeah. And going off of anything like that at all, good or bad, is a really tough thing because he's working off the rust. And it's just, again, it is a small sample size no matter what, but this has to be the year, clearly, with no fifth year option picked up, where, hey, Eric Stokes has every opportunity to go out and earn this starting job opposite Jaire Alexander. At the same token, if he doesn't, if it's just another, could be another injury, first of all, which we're all not hoping for, but if he just even plays like he did in his second season where it didn't look the same, Carrington Valentine's just going to beat him out. And then you've got Corey Ballantyne. You've got a Kalen King that's coming in as a seventh round draft pick. Like, he's going to have to earn snaps if he doesn't look like himself. But like I said, the ceiling is still a good starting corner in this league. So it is legitimately now or never for Eric Stokes.
Yeah, very much. Also top of my list. I am still really optimistic about Stokes. I'm pleased to hear that you left feeling good about his abilities from last season, although very, very, very limited sample size, obviously. Coming back from an injury like this, it's going to be tough to see if he is still even remotely the same player.
Yep.
I think to play devil's advocate here to you, if you don't mind, my fear is that his skill set was very much press man corner that fits very nicely with this kind of new scheme that Halfley wants to run. Wonderful. He still had a lot of development to go, but his thing that helped make up for some of the lack of other like technical skills was his speed.
Yep.
And you saw it on tape, right? You saw it in games. Like, if he made a mistake, he was able to actually recover because his game speed and his just speed period was just absolutely out of this world. And so we won't know, obviously, until we get in and see what he looks like. If it's the same post injury, like, he had a very, very gruesome, like, double knee ankle injury that could impact that. So if that's the case, then he's going to have to like doubly improve those like more technical skills. He was already going to have to do that, right? Yeah. But now he's going to have to even more so go beyond, because he's not going to be able to rely on his speed. So that's a little bit more of a concern. Now, if he looks as good as the coaches are saying he does, because everyone has gone out of their way to say that he looks incredible, like he did before, he's a new guy, et cetera, et cetera. And I have no doubt that given the guy that we know he is, this optimistic, like, the person that he is, attacked rehab like nobody's business, that he's coming back looking the same. If he has that speed, then amazing. Like, watch out. I think you're right. I think he'll thrive in this new scheme. But it's the speed that I fear, if he loses a step there, that it could really hurt him.
Year four in the league, there are few, if any, players that can survive a career without really honing in on the technical aspects of their position. And I am 1,000,000% with you. We don't know if this is 4.340 Eric Stokes, or now it's 4.640 Eric Stokes. We just don't know where in that range he's going to fall at this point in his career. But it is time to become that professional at the position and learn the nuances of the game that you have to at corner to be a more technically sound, technically proficient player. And if he can do that, to your point, I think there's a lot of reasons to still be optimistic, but that's really what's going to kind of boil down to is, can he do that? Can he take a step as a pure cover corner? And if he can, again, every opportunity to earn that starting job. What a week in sports we just witnessed. Caitlin Clark made her WNBA debut. The Celtics, Pacers, T-Wolves, and Mavs all advanced to their conference finals. The Stars, Panthers, and Rangers advanced in the NHL playoffs. And the PGA Championship was an epic final Sunday, and I'm sure I'm missing about 1,000 other things. This week, we get an epic Canucks-Oilers Game 7, and the conference finals will kick off in both the NHL and NBA, so basically, it's going to be amazing. But it could be more amazing with Prize Picks. This playoff season, add to the excitement by utilizing Prize Picks star players. Starred players on the board could earn you a 10% payout boost if they are in your winning lineup. And it's easier than ever to get started with quick withdrawals, easy deposits, simple gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types. It's why Prize Picks is the number one fantasy sports app. This week, I'm going with Connor McDavid, Miles Turner, and Breanna Stewart in the WNBA. I get excited every time I make my selections, and this week is going to be no different. And of course, as always, the best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Hey friends, anybody who knows me well knows that I don't get stressed out very easily. I'm able to handle most situations and events and limit nervousness and anxiety. That was not always the case, however. In college, I had bills piling up, tuition to pay, poor credit, and I just recently lost a job as well. I had no idea how important credit was, how credit worked, and I had next to no credit history. Let's just say my stress level was at an all-time high. I wish College Andy had access to Kickoff, the fastest, easiest way to safely jumpstart your credit. It would have saved me a bunch of worries and certainly some sleepless nights. I recently discovered Kickoff online. It was so easy to sign up and get started. I quickly noticed an improvement in my credit score, and the entire process was so simple and hassle-free. If you're unfamiliar with Kickoff, it's time to get up to speed. Kickoff is a smart, legit credit hack with no catch and no credit check. You make on-time payments, credit bureaus see your good behavior, and your credit grows. Sign up within minutes on your phone and start building credit right away. You simply use autopay to build credit while you sleep, and you get the added benefit of never having to worry about missing a payment. Kickoff is the number one credit building app out there, and what really sold me was that they have over 100,000 positive reviews, and 98% of them are 5 stars. So join over 1 million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Sign up today and get your first month for $1 at getkickoff.com/packaday. That's Kickoff without a C, getkickoff.com/packaday. Special offer applies to new Kickoff premium customers for their first month only, subject to approval and only available on getkickoff.com/packaday. Terms of offer are subject to change.
Yeah, now he's 2 seasons behind too. You know, like a lot of, I think there's, look, rehab, practice, et cetera, but so much of those skills, I think, happen in real game time, especially for corners. There's so much of those learnings, like pressing at the line, like all the things that you do, you have to learn by just going up against wide receivers and tight ends and running backs and like live game speed. So it's going to be interesting. I hope that I'm sure everyone at camp is going to be watching for what he looks like. And again, I think I want to be optimistic because of what he showed and what his skill set was coming in from college and the pedigree and all the like intangible traits that he has. And also just the kind of guy he is, that he brings that energy and that positivity. He doesn't strike me as a guy who's going to say, oh, well, this is going to, you know, derail my career. Oops. Like he's going to really turn that around. But yeah, he's behind. He's majorly behind.
Yeah, he's going to have to get back up to speed relatively quick, and hopefully he's capable of doing so. And we see the best season of Eric Stokes that we've seen. That would be phenomenal. All right, number three or number two on your list, I guess.
What direction I want to go in here? I think I'm going to go with AJ Dillon.
I wanted AJ Dillon. All right, go for it.
AJ is such an interesting one too, and like, so the Packers brought him back. You know, we went through the strange contract that they gave him. I think there, we went ad nauseum through like the speculation of the kind of contract they gave him, why they did it the way they did it. But the point being is that AJ Dillon is back now, and he's coming in as running back three. You know, he's actually coming into camp, in my opinion, this season, actually a step behind from where he was last season, which was like bona fide running back two. Nobody questioned it, right? He did not get the big contract in his contract year. It's because he looked a step slower. It's because he wasn't gaining the yardage, churning the yards. You know, he's like a big bruiser back who wasn't getting those first downs, wasn't being used at the goal line. There were a lot of questions with his game. Similarly, I think kind of to Eric Stokes, where he had like this really awesome breakout rookie season. You know, you think of AJ Dillon, you think of that like Titans game in the snow, and you're like, oh yeah, this is what we drafted him for. Yep. But those kinds of games have been very few and far between. And we've said, you know, he's a rhythm back. He's got to get into the rhythm. But even when he was main guy with Aaron Jones hurt all of last season, the run game was really hurting. And yes, the line wasn't run blocking well, yes, et cetera, et cetera. But like, you still have to find the holes. You still have to hit the hole. Like you still have to make yardage in this league for you to keep your job. This is the year for him. Like he has to take a step forward. Like Green Bay has given him kind of a second chance to show that he can be an impactful running back. I do not think that if he comes back and looks the same as last season, he is getting any kind of contract anywhere else or is coming back to Green Bay.
I will take it a step further. I do not believe AJ Dillon is a lock to make this 53-man roster. I will also say, just flat out up front, I wholeheartedly expect him to be on the 53-man roster. But when we get into the, oh my goodness, I can't believe they cut that player, surprise cut sort of thing, it almost always has to do with a variety of different things. Usually it's financial in some way. But what I'll say here is every running back, we know Josh Jacobs and Marshawn Lloyd are making the team. Like those, you got two of the running back spots just done. They're not going anywhere. So you have normally one running back spot left. It's not to say they couldn't keep four if they really wanted to, but usually one more running back spot, especially if you want to get into the point of keeping a third quarterback or things like that. Some of those other positions are going to get very tight. AJ Dillon is at a disadvantage to every other running back on the roster in the fact that he is older than every single one of them, meaning Emmanuel Wilson, Ellis Merriweather, and Jarvion Howard. He is older than every single one of them. He makes more money than every single one of them. He has less years of team control than every single one of them. And you might be saying, well, Andy, yeah, but he got that really good veteran benefit, so he's only going to count, you know, 1.2925 against the cap this year. And that is true. That's 1,000,000% true. But they still have to pay him in hard, cold cash, $2.575 million. And the other three guys that I just named, they don't have to do that for. So they save a legitimate amount of real money by moving on from him. Now, like I said, the one thing that of all the things that is most important that AJ Dillon does have going for him is in all likelihood, he's just better than the other three guys, which is the most important of those things. But if Emmanuel Wilson or Jarvion Howard or Ellis Merriweather, or any of them get within a short distance of AJ Dillon as a running back, they're going to go with the guy that is younger, cheaper, and under more team control. It just, that's the business of the NFL. So like I said, I'll start by saying one more time, I believe that AJ Dillon will make this 53, but he still is going to have to show every step of the way that he is worth that roster spot, that he is able to do the things that they want him to do, that he is still picking up blitzes at a high level, all of it. And I think having him as a number three running back is a luxury. I mean, he very well could be the number two. He could beat out Marshawn Lloyd too. That's not out of the realm of possibility here either. But like I said, I think this is going to have to be a season where Dillon shows, hey, I'm still a really good back. Not only can I make this team, I'm going to try to be the number two running back. I'm going to try to be the next guy up if something happens to Josh Jacobs. And I just got a dose of reality that I didn't get a big contract in this offseason. I'm still young enough where if I go out and I get this opportunity and have a big season, I could get a pretty decent sized contract next year. So absolutely, I'm with you. I think Dillon, it is very much a now or never sort of scenario for him.
What he has going for him against those other guys is experience.
Yep.
Right. And trust from the coaches. Well, like I know for it. I think I can confidently say that Matt LaFleur would rather have AJ Dillon back there next to Jordan Love than any of those other guys that you named if push came to shove and somebody got hurt. He can pass pro better, he can catch the ball out of the backfield better. Like there are certainly things. However, it is pretty crazy to go from a second round pick to on the same team that you were drafted by, right? To now like you're fighting to be running back three. Yeah. That, I mean, a dose of reality, I think, is the perfect way to put it. Hopefully it lights a fire under him. He still very much likely has the juice, right? Because they do running back by committee in Green Bay. He doesn't have as much on the legs necessarily as some other backs out there. So again, if he's looking for the contract next season, which he should be,
I'm sure he is,
has a family to feed. He also has that going for him against likely others, not to look too far ahead, but we are looking ahead on the next free agency market. He's going to also have that going for him, right? He has less touches. He has less carries. He's going to be, what's the word I'm looking for? Lighter, healthier. I don't know. You know,
less wear and tear.
Less wear and tear. Thank you. So there are going to be, if he can show that he can still be a reliable, productive back, he has a number of skills, right, that a team is going to want to have, potentially likely in a running back too. He has to show it. It is now.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. By the way, just this will never happen, but like I would pay good money to see AJ Dillon in like the UFL. I would love to just see I would tune in. I've never watched a UFL game. I would tune in if he all of a sudden made it to like the UFL. Like I said, it's not going to happen. He's still a really good running back, but I would tune into that just to see how UFL teams would try to handle AJ. I think it'd be really fun to watch. All right, I'm going to go with my next one.
Okay.
AJ Slayton, another contract year guy. When TJ Slayton plays well, he plays really freaking well. And I've sort of gone off like the TJ Slayton experience is there'll be a game where you're just like, oh my goodness, TJ Slayton looks incredible. And then there'll be like eight games that go by where you don't even think about TJ Slayton. Not bad. There's nothing bad that he did, but not good. You just don't even recognize him. You don't think about him. You don't notice him. And then there's like one like game where you're just like, what was TJ Slayton doing in that game? Like that is the 10 game experience of TJ Slayton. One unbelievable game, eight games of you don't even recognize him. And then one game of like, what the heck was that? So there's the contract year defensive tackles is like a thing tale as old as time. I truly believe if TJ Slayton goes out and has a big game this year, I'm not saying necessarily for Green or a big season this year. I'm not necessarily saying for Green Bay, but like he could get like a 3-year, $36 million contract, maybe even a little bit more if he had a huge season this year. if he has just like his kind of his normal TJ Slayton season, he's probably looking at like a 1 year, $4 million deal, maybe 1 year, $5 million deal in free agency. Like that is the difference here for TJ Slayton, like somewhere between $4 million and $40 million this upcoming offseason based on how he plays this season. So A, do you want to stay with Green Bay and have that opportunity to get a big contract in Green Bay? All right, well then it's now or never. And number two, do you want to show out that you're like a really good defensive tackle that's worth getting that huge contract that some team's willing to look at TJ Slayton and be like, oh my goodness, 27 years old, 6'4", 330, can move like that in the middle of our defensive line? Yeah, I'm willing to give a 3 year, $40 million deal for that type of player if he shows out this year. So it's not necessarily any, I like TJ Slayton. I think he's a good player, really solid rotational piece along that defensive line. I'm excited to see what he's going to be able to do in Jeff Hafley's defense. But for him, personally, there's like a huge, massive difference that of directions this could go between, like I said, a 1 year, $4 million, and like 3 year, $40 million deal. It probably ends up somewhere in the middle, but that's the range of outcomes for Slayton based on this season.
It's a major range. That's it, like, is. I can retire early range, or I probably need to work for a little longer range. Exactly. Do you think the Packers, if he plays, like let's say he's in that higher end range, are the Packers looking to bring him back given that they also have to pay Kenny?
That's I'm glad that you brought up that second part, because I think the second part answers the first part. Like Kenny's not young, and he's young in the fact that, no, I'm dead serious. Like he's young in the fact of like from an age standpoint, but dude was like 16 years old when he started in the NFL. yes. He's played a ton of snaps. And this is another one. Well, just again, be very transparent. I think they get a deal done. I think Kenny's probably a Packer for another few seasons. But if people like don't recognize by now that business is business in this league, like we just saw Aaron Jones again this offseason, like business is business. And they're going to look at his body and say, like, do we think giving him a 3 year big contract is going to pay off? Because we're not paying him for what he was, we're paying him for what he's going to be moving forward. And if they see any sort of slowing down, any sort of wear and tear that they think is going to be detrimental to him being a long-term piece in Green Bay, I could see them saying, you know what? We love Kenny Clark. We would love to be still in the Kenny Clark business, but not at that amount of money. And Kenny Clark just might say, nah, I'm worth that amount of money. I'll get it from somewhere else. And that could easily be the way that this goes. So I think the latter may answer this question as to whether or not Slayton is back. I would be surprised if they gave decent sized deals to both Kenny Clark and TJ Slayton in the offseason. But defensive tackle is one of those really, really unique positions on the team where Kenny's a free agent. Slayton's a free agent. Devontae Wyatt, they're going to have to choose the fifth year option. And then you've got guys like Colby Wooden and Carl Brooks, I think especially Brooks, who we really, really like, but are probably more those rotation.
He's What's a tweener kind of an edge rusher, unless he's putting weight on.
Yeah, I think he'll probably be. I think both of them are going to be those the three technique sort of guys in this defense. But I think they're going to have to prove themselves before they're in that conversation. And neither of them are the run stoppers. Neither is Devontae that Kenny Clark or TJ Slayton are. So I think you're in this interesting spot right now where like everyone looks at defensive tackle and is like, yeah, we got Clark, we got Slayton, Wyatt, Brooks, Wooden. Like we feel really good. Plus you can kick LVN inside. We don't really need to add anyone. But going into next year, we're going to be having a totally different conversation based on what they do with these two guys.
No, 100%. This was definitely a, yeah, we're set for now kind of off-season conversation. But Kenny's a little bit of like, I know we've totally moved off of TJ Slayton, but like Kenny's a little bit of a linchpin here in terms of what kind of moves they make. But TJ Slayton can also disrupt that entire conversation, to your point, based on the way he plays. Yeah. If he has this like breakout season, then whoa, Nelly, we are all of a sudden having like, a very different conversation. Although I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I mean, Kenny's coming off a 7.5 sack season. So unless he has like some major drop off this season, which let's be real, none of us hope happens. I can't really see a slowdown, but Packers know better.
Yeah. Like I said, I fully expect somebody to get worked out with Kenny. Heck, if you told me tomorrow or Monday, as people are listening to this, that like Green Bay announces a new contract extension with Kenny Clark, 0% surprise whatsoever. But like, again, I'm intrigued to see what they do at that overall position.
Yeah.
You're up.
I'm up. Okay. I don't know if this is spicy because he's only a second year player. But I feel like it's kind of now or never for Anders Carlson.
I had him on my list.
Okay. And again, like, it's a little bit of that. All right, you had your rookie growing pain season, but if you look the same as you did last season, this season, they've already brought in kicker competition. They signed Greg Joseph. Like, kickers have such a short leash because you swing a game so easily, like, solely on yourself. Like, this is such a team sport for the 11 guys that are on the field, but kickers are really in such a class of their own. I mean, how many games you could list off the top of your head right now that were won or lost because a kicker went out there and missed a goal or made a field goal, right? Anders cannot be missing those, especially with the taste in our mouth from this last divisional round game.
Yep.
And he is a draft pick. So they spent capital on you. You show up in camp and show up when you play this season, because I think if he has a bad season, like, you out.
Here's the thing, right? If you're a kicker and they sign two more kickers, like, you're on notice. You are officially on notice. Like, it is rare to, like, a lot of teams don't even carry two kickers on the roster. It is extremely rare to have three kickers on. Like, that is like, hey, wake up. Heads up, you are definitely on notice. We brought two of these guys in. I took it one step further. I actually put that it's now or never for Anders Carlson, Greg Joseph, and Jack Podlesny, all three of the kickers, because I don't think Greg Joseph is getting another chance in the NFL if he doesn't, you know, get this one, just because his career has sort of been eh. And I don't know that Jack Podlesny, undrafted free agent out of Georgia, is ever going to necessarily get another opportunity again either. This is his second team. He didn't even make it out of Minnesota like a season ago. And then, you know, he gets the second opportunity. I don't know that he gets a third chance. So I think all three kickers are basically, you better win this one, because I don't know. It's not going to go great if you don't.
Yeah. I actually think of all three of these, if Anders gets cut, he's the one most likely to get another job.
Oh, for sure. A million percent. Yeah, totally agreed. All right. If that's your spicy one, I have a spicy one. I don't think it actually is, but I think it should be. I'm going Rich Bisaccia. I'm going
Rich. Oh, I didn't know you could throw coaches in here.
Oh, we can throw anything in here. We can throw anything in here. I'm going Rich Bisaccia. I don't think that it probably will be. He's an assistant head coach. He's well-respected by the organization and by pretty much everyone in the NFL. He's still under contract. I don't think, even if the special teams finishes like 29th again, that he's just going to get the axe. I think he probably should. Like, if this is another season of awful special teams, where, like, there's these catastrophic things that are happening again, I don't know. Like, I'd like to believe that Rich Bisaccia is the guy that can just finally turn this around. We have seen no return on investment in the past two seasons, despite the fact that Green Bay has actually put a decent investment into legitimate core special teamers on this team. And if you're going to go and say, like, hey, we've got our guy at quarterback and we think we're going to be a top 10 offense, and we've just now brought in a brand new guy on defense, and we've sort of, you know, added a bunch of draft picks and Xavier McKinney to this defense, and you're thinking that hopefully is going to get corrected, you can't have another bottom five special teams. So whether or not this is actually a now or never might be a little bit more up for debate, but, like, man, we need to see some results from special teams. This can't keep going on. It just can't keep going on.
Also, they have an all-pro returner, and they're still bad. Like, they had Keyshawn Nixon, who's the best returner in the league the last two seasons, and they're still not even, like, bottom half, like, bottom third of the league. He's literally carrying them. It's so bad. I actually do not think this is a hot take at all. I think you're 100% right. I think the fact that he is a assistant head coach does throw a little bit of a knot into this to untangle. However, crazier things have happened, because you're right. Like, they are not producing to the level. If this was a business, like, football is
I know what you mean.
If this was like my job, and you're throwing all of these resources into a team at my job, and you're looking at like revenue from Q1, and it's still in the red, and HR is like, no, we're going to keep hiring. My boss would be like, no, they're not performing. We need to scrap these people, retake a look at the books, and then we can decide, right?
And just one on top of that too, there are times like where you question of like, all right, is it the coach or did they just not get the right players in this, like for that sort of system and situation? It is abundantly clear that Rich Bisaccia has had a large say in purchasing the groceries at the special teams. Like Anders Carlson very much seemed like a Rich Bisaccia guy. They got in Dallin Levitt, who was a Rich Bisaccia guy. Obviously, Keyshawn Nixon has worked out very well, who has been a Rich Bisaccia guy. But it is very, very clear that he has had a large say in what type of players they've wanted to acquire and keep on that special teams group. So it can't just be like, nope, we don't think we got the right guys. He has had that say in it too. So
you also can't tell me that like Tyler Davis tearing his ACL was like that detrimental. Yeah.
It can't be, right? Like, I'm so sorry, but if your special team success is tied to the lifeblood of Tyler Davis, I'm sorry, you're not doing something right at that point. Yeah. As potentially good as Tyler Davis can be, it's not changing lives at that position. It shouldn't be, at least. So, or we are severely underestimating Tyler Davis's special team's prowess. All right.
No, I think this is a good one, Andy.
All right, let's do one more each, and then we can kind of go lightning round at the end if we've got a few more on our list.
Okay. I only have two, but I think one of them is like the most obvious one on the face of the planet. So I'm going to do my other one, which is Samori Toure.
All right.
Because, and this will be quick. I think, again, fairly obvious here, but this wide receiver room is stacked with talent. There's already, in my opinion, let's see, Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Loster Rocks,
Malik Heath, and Bo Melvin.
I just said Loster Rocks, roster locks. Malik Heath and Bo Melton, who will fight for a spot. I don't know if Samori Toure has been on the roster longer. You also have Grant DuBose, who, you know, we don't know yet still, but again, has had less time. I think the longer you have clung onto a roster, I'm using the leash analogy here, but the shorter your leash becomes because they have seen enough. And if you cannot prove that you deserve to be on this roster, they're likely going to cut you. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if he was a cut in this camp, because it's been a few years and we've just seen Samori Toure keep falling in terms of like depth. He hasn't been able to prove that what is he to this wide receiver room, right? Like, what is he? I don't know,
in all likelihood. He's probably a practice squad guy. Is probably right.
Exactly. So they have too much talent here. He's fighting like a major uphill battle, I think, to cling on to wide receiver six. And I think you and I could go through what Bo Melton and Malik Heath do better than he does, like very easily, to warrant a spot on this roster.
He's going to have to A, just take a step as a receiver, but B, crush it on special teams to try to earn that number six job over Malik Heath or over a Grant DuBose. I think that's what he's going to have to really sort of make his mark on. He does still have one more year of team control after this, which is a little bit helpful for him still, but I agree with you. I had him on my list as well. I think it's a bit of an uphill climb. I'm more curious, who's your more obvious one? Throw one Roy more in there. Newman. Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. Yep. Sure.
I don't have to say anything there.
But also, Royce Newman, 1 year, $3.1 million left on his salary now. Justice Mosqueda did a fantastic article. It's something I've thought about for a while. So Royce Newman hit an accelerator in his contract as a rookie accelerator because he played so many snaps, specifically his rookie season, where you get additional salary because you do that. And in a lot of cases, like TJ Slayton got in, it's going to be good for TJ Slayton. But in a lot of cases, it actually is detrimental to the player because it's not guaranteed money and it's money that goes against the cap. So it's not like AJ Dillon's deal where you have this money that is like hidden money where yes, you have to pay it, but it doesn't count against the cap. Like it's all against the cap and it's not guaranteed at all. So now you're giving like every incentive to just release the dude, which is not doing the player any favors whatsoever. So go check that article out on Acme Packing from Justice. It's really smart and really well done per use. But yeah, Royce Newman, not only not playing well, but now got this incentive as well. That's paying him way more money. His dead cap hits 124,000. They save basically 3 million by releasing him. So yeah, if there's 0.0%, I would be beyond shocked if he stays on that deal. Could he make it and they like figure out a restructure or they release him and they bring him back or something? Maybe, but like there's no chance he stays on that deal whatsoever.
With the amount of talent they just brought in on the line, like I understood it when they needed depth. Now there is literally zero reason.
Totally agree. And I'm going to stick on the offensive line for my last one. I'm just going to group the three offensive tackles all together, Caleb Jones, Luke Tenuta, and Andre Dillard, because I think all of these guys are sort of fighting in different ways. I'll start with Caleb Jones and Luke Tenuta. Both of these guys are third-year guys. Caleb Jones has basically had two legitimate redshirt seasons. Luke Tenuta has been a little bit different where they picked him up midway through the first season. And then last year was on IR the entire season. I think what we forget about Tenuta, I talk about it way too much probably, but is that he actually was active over Rashid Walker on the active roster at the end of the 2022 season. Towards the end of that year, they would activate him and deactivate Rashid Walker and Caleb Jones. So Tenuta was ahead of those guys. And then Tenuta made the 53 last year because they were hopeful that he would be able to come back off of IR at some point and they could add him back on the 53-man roster. They didn't have to do that. They did because it seemingly like they liked him that much. So he's an interesting one, but both of these guys have basically had, for better or worse, two redshirt seasons. We've seen the pathway here. There's two pathways. There's Yosh Nijman and there's Alex Light, where they both basically get two redshirt seasons. And then now it's like, are you ready to play or you're not? And Yosh Nijman was, and he became a swing tackle and backup player and eventual starter for them. He got a nice contract this offseason for obviously, I think it was Carolina maybe. And then Alex Light did not. He did not develop. He was not ready to play, and they just moved on. So I believe for Caleb Jones and Luke Tenuta, it's going to be one of those two. You're ready to play, and you're ready to be that guy right now, or we're not going to keep you another redshirt season. And then the other, Andre Dillard, this is a guy who last year, just last year with Tennessee, got a 3-year, $29 million deal with $10 million guaranteed and couldn't do anything. This year, he got 1-year vet minimum with zero guaranteed. So like it's literally saying nobody else is giving him any guarantees to be on a roster. The NFL is sort of like, you better do something because we're not going to pay you anything. This might be it for Dillard if he can't prove that he's ready to go in Green Bay this season. So those three offensive tackles, one, maybe two of them probably make it, but which one it is or which two it is going to be dependent on this offseason.
Yeah. Interesting. Right. I did not know that about Andre Dillard, no guarantees.
None whatsoever. So they can cut him with no penalty, no dead cap hit. Anyone else that you had on your short list of players? I have a few more. All right. So I'm going to give you a list and I just want to see if you have any reaction to any of these.
Okay.
I have Devontae Wyatt and Quay Walker, but only as the reason I didn't bring them up in like this main conversation, only as do you get your fifth year option picked up? Like it's a now or never of like, if you want that fifth year option picked up and you want that, you know, guaranteed money in year five, you have to prove yourself now, because if you don't do it this season, it's not going to get picked up in all likelihood next season.
You feel that way about Quay?
I feel more that way about Quay than I do about Devontae, actually, especially when they just went out and drafted two linebackers in the top 100. So yeah, I very much feel that way. So I don't think either of them are, if you ask me right now, based on where they're at right now, if either of them got year five picked up, I would say no. But I think that this year will go a long way in determining for both of them.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't think either of them have done enough for a fifth year, like fully guaranteed, like $13 million deal, whatever it ends. I don't know what it is for each of their individual positions, but
I don't feel like Devontae Wyatt has. I also don't feel like he has been put in the position to. Yeah. He's been a rotational guy. Like he needs more snaps. I don't think it's necessarily that his skill isn't there. I think it's a opportunity. I think Quay is nearly there.
Interesting.
I think he is near. I know that he is like a major controversial debate figure amongst us all. You're right. This will be the season. He is now the guy. Devondre Campbell is gone. He's going to be inside linebacker one. He's going to wear the dot. He's going to be in a new scheme. We'll see. If I had to put money on it now, I would say they pick up his fifth year option.
100%. I'm going to be controversial again. I don't think he's guaranteed linebacker one, and I don't think he's guaranteed to wear the green dot. I don't think either of those are guarantees. Think
they give it to Cooper?
No, I think Xavier McKinney has a legitimate chance to wear the green dot in this defense. He's not going to be off the field at any point anyway. But I actually think both of those things are, but I'm also with you. I would probably say, I think Quay Walker is linebacker one, and I think he probably is the green dot. I think at least there's a good chance of it, but I wouldn't even say that either of those things are locks either. So
if you had to put money on it, you don't think they're picking up his fifth year option?
As of right now, like I'm not saying, I just think it's totally dependent on how this season goes. If you were asking me if I would pick it up, like if the decision was today, would I pick it up based on his play so far? My answer personally would be no. That's why I'll put it that way. As far as if I had to put money on it, I think it's a legitimate coin flip.
Do you think that they're okay? We're going off the rails here, but I have to
rails
ask.
Rails are broken. It's great.
Do you think that they, maybe this is why I'm not a GM, but do you think that they're like
not either.
The choice to pick up Savage's maybe quote unquote a little bit too early is going to potentially affect how Goot plays this, or it's very player dependent?
I do think they probably regret the Savage decision, but I do think it's going to still be very player dependent, and they'll make each decision independently based on where the roster's at, how the players are playing and everything like that. But clearly they did not with Eric Stokes this year, which I don't think was ever really in any debate, but both of them, I truly believe, and like I said, give me all the Devontae Wyatt stock in the world. I think he's going to crush it in this system, but I think both of them getting it picked up are completely dependent on how they play this season. All right. Other ones, just really quick. Anthony Johnson Jr. I think when you sign a safety and draft three more, basically the entire rest of the safety group is put on notice at that point. And I think you probably have one spot maybe for Anthony Johnson Jr., Zane Anderson, and Benny Sapp. And we know fifth safety, if they keep one, is going to be a special teams position more likely. And Sapp and Zane Anderson kind of known a lot more for special teams than what Anthony Johnson Jr. is. So already sort of a little bit of a now or never for him. Matt Orzech, I actually think Peter Bowden at long snapper has the ability to earn that job. And then Jonathan Ford, seventh round pick. It's the same conversation as Caleb Jones. You basically, I know most of his was on the practice squad, but you've basically got two redshirt seasons. You're not going to get another practice squad spot if you don't show that you're ready to make the 53 this season.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, they have Benny Sapp listed as a corner, not a safety. So I don't know if
Packers on the Packers roster
on the depth chart. Yeah. So
no, way. I don't believe you.
I'm literally looking at it right now. So maybe with that loophole, that changes things.
On the actual roster page though, the depth chart is done, I think, by their He's not taking in the depth chart too. What depth chart are you looking at?
Okay. I don't know. Oh, yeah, I'm looking at ESPN. Sorry.
Oh, you're all good. What is ESPN?
Either way. Okay. ESPN doesn't know what they're talking about. Either way, I don't know if I agree with you that drafting all of those guys was putting the room on notice when the room was Anthony Johnson Jr. and Xavier McKinney. I think drafting those guys was them saying, our room is empty.
Yes.
We need to fill it. So while I'm saying this somewhat in jest, I mean it. Like, I do think obviously he's going to have major competition to see legitimate playing time. Like, this is the year for him to say, okay, I'm kind of at an equal playing field with my peers now. I've had a year in the building over the rookies. Let me prove what I can do. Obviously, we know who safety one is. It's not a question. Yep. I do think he is at a disadvantage, like I mean, Javon Bullard is going to start over the rest of them. Like, he's kind of competing against the Evan Williams and the Ketan Oladapos. But I actually don't know. Like, I think I'd be surprised if they just, like, outright got rid of Anthony Johnson Jr., unless he looked just, like, truly terrible.
I think it's just going to get in one of those roster math things again of, like, how many offensive linemen are you keeping? How many quarterbacks? How many wide receivers? Did you want to keep a seventh wide receiver? And, like, I could easily see these are those situations where you get into of, like, all right, if we're going to keep the three rookies and we're going to keep Xavier McKinney, like, do you just release Sapp, Anderson, and Anthony Johnson Jr. and be like, all we need to do is get two of those guys back on the practice squad and we're going to feel really good about things. And we might just be able to get any two of our choice or even three of them if you want. But I really like Anthony Johnson Jr. I hope he just steps up and again plays great and can be that number five guy. And I think there's a good chance he can be. But I still think you've got a tough safety room now that you're going to have to go and compete against.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I think it is unfortunate that last season he didn't get the time, because if he had shown any, I mean, last season was like the season for him to be like, you know, hey, this room sucks.
Yeah.
You know, let me show you what I can do. Because he'll have a harder time with like a major upgrade in talent.
All right. I have one more question for you before we get out of here. I know we're going long, but I have to ask you this anyway, because I know it's going to come up in the comments. One player that we did not talk about today was Christian Watson. Technically, his name did come up. I personally don't believe he's in this conversation, which is why I have not brought him up so far today. But I do know a lot of people are more on the like, I don't even know. Not, I don't know if it's like bust, he's got to play, he's got to stay healthy, whatever it is. I just, before I get your response to it, I just can't put him on that list, because even if he has another unhealthy season, he's still under contract next year, and they're still going to give him everything that he can to do next year to still go out and play at the high level that he's capable of playing at. So I don't think there's any sort of now or never, because he still has two more years left on his deal and he has plenty of time to go show all the amazing talents that he has. So I can't get there with it, but your response to, you know, anyone that might say, why is Christian Watson not on this list?
I have never disagreed with a discourse more, I think.
I think they never disagree with me more. I'm like, oh my goodness. I'm
excited. No. Like, it just, it's like, I have such a hard time with it, because look, yes, the guy has been hurt. Don't think he wants to be hurt. Don't think anyone wants him to be hurt. I think they've done everything in their power to ensure that he stays healthy. If the issue was that he's hurt and when he's on the field, he's not playing well, then we'd be having a different conversation. But when he is on the field, it is like night and day. I mean, he is a difference maker. Like, I don't know how you watch the Packers offense when he is playing versus when he's not. And then you're like, he's on the hot seat. No, he's not. Yeah. He is incredible. He changes the game when he is on the field. Even when he doesn't have the ball, he changes the way defenses play this Packers offense. There is no world in which Christian Watson is a now or never. All we need to do is make sure he stays healthy. That's it.
Somebody in your, while you were talking about that, already typed up the best availability, or the best ability is availability. I guarantee you somebody already typed it, like ready to put it in. But yes.
Yeah, look, I get it. I get it. Like an injury history, especially a soft tissue injury history, is tough. I mean, super tough. You have to stay healthy to have a longevity in this league. And eventually this is going to come up when it comes time for some kind of contract discussion. Like, but we've got time for that. For the purposes of this discussion, no. If he stays healthy, if he plays all 17 games for the next two seasons, we're gonna be like, oh yeah, remember when his first two seasons he was like, he had all those hamstring injuries? Oh man, that sucked. That's it.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I think you. We can never speak on injuries to like predict what's gonna happen in any way, but. He's certainly deserving of catching a break this season, he and Eric Stokes. And hopefully those guys can just stay healthy and be a really big part of what hopefully can be a very special 2024 Packers team. Perry, I did not expect to talk 55, 56 minutes on Now or Never Packers, but it's a good list. We talked about outside of Christian Watson, we still talked about Samori Toure, Andre Dillard, Royce Newman, Josh Myers, Caleb Jones, Luke Tenuta, AJ Dillon, TJ Slayton, Eric Stokes, Anthony Johnson Jr., the three kickers, Matt Orzech, Jonathan Ford, and Rich Bisaccia. So we covered some ground, and it'll be interesting to see. I want to bookmark this one a little bit to see if we can come back to it, you know, next year and be like, yeah, those handful of people like really stepped up and played great. And then like, you know, four of these guys didn't even make the 53 or something. So we'll see, but very intrigued to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, this was a fun one. I enjoyed this. I'm not surprised we went this long. This always happens.
You're very right. Where can we find all of your amazing work, especially over on Packs What She Said?
You can follow us at PWSS Podcast, myself and Maggie Loney on Twitter. We just announced that we are going back to Cheesehead TV. So you will find all of our stuff on Cheesehead TV starting probably right around training camp. We are doing the transition soon. So we're very excited to be, feels like coming home to Cheesehead TV. Yeah, just follow us on Twitter. We're gonna have some fun guests soon. We're really excited about them. And yeah, that is all for now.
Obviously, huge friends of the show. Make sure you're checking out Cheesehead TV every single day. And of course, make sure you're checking out Packs What She Said. Maggie and Perry both do tremendous, tremendous work. And those are always can't miss episodes. You can find them again on Packs What She Said, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And of course, eventually back on Cheesehead TV as well. You can follow the Packaday Podcast at Packaday Podcast. Make sure to like, subscribe, give those 5-star reviews, check out YouTube memberships. Of course, you can find me if you want at Andy Herman NFL as well. That's going to do it for Perry and I today. But until next time, and as always, Perry,
go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.